The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. It's the show that answers the question,
is it possible to make a vowel sound out of a potato?
Can the word potato be a verb?
What about an actual potato? Can that be a verb?
What about the word verb? Can the word verb be a verb? Can it be a potato?
Mama, I'm scared myself.
And now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Albin, Chris, what's going on, man?
Oh, it's wonderful. Woohoo!
You know, whenever I say the word man, I suddenly feel like I'm doing an impression of Joe Biden.
Hey, man.
Yeah. Whoa, somebody just sniffed my hair. What was that?
Yes, exactly. It's the spirit of Joe Biden. Listen, you know one thing we didn't talk about? First of all, today we talked to our curmudgeon friend, Peter Hitchens. Actually, we're speaking to Dinesh D'Souza. We spoke to him recently, but we're going to rerun it in a few minutes because it's very important. He has a new book out. He's an extraordinary thinker. He's attacked dramatically, but listen to what he says. See what you have to say. I just want to say one thing before I give you guys a chance to talk. Right now, Ann Coulter, she tweeted that Elihu Yale, okay, after whom Yale University is named, was not just a slave owner, but I believe a slave trader, okay? And she says that Yale should be canceled. They should change their name. Now, I went to that university and I agree with that idea. In other words, to be consistent, if you are going to tear down statues of Robert E. Lee, for example, let's just start there. How do you not go after Yale, which is named not after, you know, a gentleman who led the Confederacy in a war over slavery, but a man who traded in slaves. Yale University has an endowment. I think only Harvard has a bigger one, and Harvard, John Harvard, has even bigger problems probably than Elihu Yale. But how is it that Yale can keep the name? I mean, let's put this in context. Yale has 12 residential colleges. One of them, the one in which I was assigned, is Calhoun College, named after John C. Calhoun, who was a vice president of the United States, I believe, attended Yale and was pro-slavery. Well, recently they got rid of the name. There's no longer a Calhoun College. It has been renamed, and I literally don't remember the name of the woman after whom they named it. I'm sure a very worthy candidate, a black woman. But the point is that John C. Calhoun, who is pro-slave, that's you can't compare that to a man after whom the entire university was named, Yale, Elihu Yale, who was, you know, not on the right side of this stuff. Now, I don't think any of this cancel culture should be happening, but by the logic of the cancel culture, you would have to go after Yale first. They have a gigantic endowment. I don't understand why that's not being brought up, or let me say I do understand why it's not being brought up. It's not being brought up because Yale University, like the New York Times, whatever, they're invested in a brand, and they don't want to lose the investment in that brand. And I think they should change the name to Nathan Hale University. Hale rhymes with Yale. And you know what? Harvard's going to have to change their name. So it's not like you get a big H and they get a big H. You know, we're gonna get rid of the Y and change to an H. It'll become Hale University after a glorious human being, Nathan Hale. I write about him in my If You Can Keep It book. And if you change it to Hale University, Harvard's going to change their name. But all you'd have to do, it still rhymes. And this is after one of the truly worthy heroes of our past, Nathan Hale, killed by the British in the Revolution. So anyway, I just had to say that. So
you could drop the Y all together and just change it to Ale University, which is kind of lowest common denominator. Everyone likes it.
Ale is not a person. Ale is a thing, and a thing can never have any kind of an intellectual or ideological position.
Yeah, but
so it's safe.
Yeah, but a lot of kids go to college to drink, so it seems to make sense. Yeah,
the appropriate.
You know what? I just found a Lincoln quote that seems to apply for today. It says, "If it wasn't for cancel culture, America would have no culture at all."
That's from Abraham Lincoln.
No, it's Alan Lincoln, not
Alan Lincoln. Right. That's
my question. Is what's the statute of limitations for these statues? Pun intended. You know, they are tearing down the statue outside the History Museum in New York today of Robin Williams from Night at the Museum. They're tearing that down.
That's a good joke.
Yeah. No, but seriously, how, you know, they took down Grant's statue, and obviously Grant, you know, defeated the Confederates, but they tore it down over the weekend, I think in Washington State or somewhere out there, because of his treatment of indigenous folks, back in his day. But it's like, how far back do you go? You know, are they going to take on the Temple of Giza, you know, the Pyramid of Giza in Egypt because they had slaves?
By slaves.
Yeah, it was built by slaves. But
pyramids were all built by slaves, and they need to come down, and they need to come down right now. I think that all the protesters should go to Egypt like today.
Right. But are you going to – where do you stop? Because I think the asteroids should get canceled because they wiped out the dinosaurs, you know, and that was horrible. And they're getting a free pass.
How is it possible that the asteroids get a free pass?
I don't know.
Thinking. People even go after that asteroid. It's probably like a zillion light years away by now. But you know what? We can catch it.
Yeah.
All right. So we've gone crazy here. No, seriously, though, we're living through weird times. We know that. And I want to be a voice of some sanity and clarity here. And people have tried to cancel me. I put out a tweet about the Black Lives Matter thing, whatever. And to me, this is all clear. I get all my information from Black friends, okay?
Right.
But the people who come after me, they just don't like it, or they don't get it, or whatever, or they don't have the rigor to look into it, because I'm not sure how you can disagree with the fact that Black Lives Matter has hijacked a legitimate protest against the death of George Floyd. Like, I don't really get, it seems pretty obvious that they're doing that, and that George Floyd is not honored by looting and by trashing and by, you know,
I mean, they gave his funeral was basically a funeral that you might give to somebody who's a saint. Now you can have any kind of funeral you want, but if Floyd is up, I'm sure he's up in heaven looking down. Would he say, "I want you to remember me by killing people, by destroying millions and millions of dollars worth of property? That's the best way to remember me and what my life was like."
You understand, Alvin, that people are giving the looters and the violent people a pass. And
right.
To me, that's the definition of racism. It's a little bit like when they say, when you hear a real racist say, like, you know, Blacks, they're thieves by nature, right? Like, you hear, like, that's a true racist statement.
Right.
And there are people who have that feeling about all kinds of ethnicities, like those people are blah, blah, blah. And when you give people a pass on destroying a property and arson and whatever it is, to my mind, it's like patting them on the head and saying, like, well, they're like children. They really can't control their passions. They're more passionate, you know, than we are. And we have to let them do that. I think it was Don Lemon who said on CNN on his program that he goes, hey, like, I don't think stealing, you know, TVs is the answer, but who am I, you know, to tell people how to respond? Like, that's what he said. Who am I to tell people how to respond? Like, yeah, thievery is that's a good way to respond. That's a good way. And I kind of think it's patting people on the head, because Martin Luther King Jr. was absolutely non violent. So you have a choice. It's either the MLK way, which was fundamentally Christian and nonviolent, or the BLM way, which is anti-American and ultimately is going to harm and is harming blacks. All right, when we come back, my conversation with Dinesh D'Souza, unbelievable stuff. Check out our YouTube channel. Please go to the Eric Metaxas Show on YouTube. Subscribe. Tell your friends to subscribe. All right, we'll be back.
I'll say goodbye to all my sorrow and bye tomorrow.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. As promised, my friend Dinesh D'Souza is on the program. Dinesh, welcome.
Hey, Eric. Great to be on the show.
I want to talk to you about two things. First of all, current events, which is to say everything that's happening right now, a lot of tragedy, a lot of difficulty in America, but it ties in rather perfectly with your book, which is out today. Today is the launch day of your new book, The United States of Socialism, Who's Behind It, Why It's Evil, How to Stop It. And I just happen to have a copy right here in case anybody is interested in seeing what it looks like. Dinesh, congratulations on the book.
Thank you. I'm very excited. I wrote the book really before coronavirus, before these this outbreak of looting and rioting. And yet all these events couldn't be more ominous and couldn't be more predictive of the themes that the book is all about. So it feels like it explodes right out of the headlines.
I mean, yes, lucky for you or unlucky for the world, but who cares? Because there's nothing we can do about it except talk about it and try to bring some sense to the horror. I tweeted this morning that what has happened is that criminals, looters and arsonists and vandals have desecrated the memory of George Floyd, who was a Christian, and they have hijacked the civil rights movement of Martin Luther King Jr. and Rosa Parks and Jackie Robinson, all of whom would be absolutely horrified by the behavior of many people today. Now, we know that there are peaceful protesters, but it seems to me that the whole thing has been hijacked by Antifa thugs, by people who couldn't care less about George Floyd or about advancing the cause of blacks in America.
Let me try to explain why that happens, why you get this kind of hijacking, which otherwise seems to be sort of unfortunate and accidental. Socialism originally was intended to be for the working class. Marx thought that society is divided into two camps, the workers and the capitalists. And Marx thought that the worker, for whom Marx had a lot of sympathy, the guy sweating and working on a dock or a foreman, that guy's working too hard. He's being exploited. He's at some point he won't take it anymore, and he's going to overthrow the capitalist class. So socialism was rooted in this class division. Now, interestingly, there has never been that kind of a worker revolt of the kind Marx predicted anywhere in the world from Marx's day until today. It's never happened. And so the left, going back now several decades, realized, well, you know, the working class is kind of unreliable. They're not going to be our proletariat. They're not going to do the job for us. In fact, today, if you look for a working class guy, particularly a white working class guy, you're more likely to see him in a Trump rally. So the left said, look, we need a new proletariat. We need new types of division that create new types of grievance. And we will try to mobilize these new proletariats to do what the working class will not do. And their primary candidate is racial grievance. The idea here is that, look, there is a real history of racial grievance. If we can tap the veins of that, if we can exploit that, we can make blacks, in a sense, into the discontented class that Marx thought would be the working class. And so this is why the socialist left does this. Now, I call this marriage between classic socialism and identity politics, I call it identity socialism. And it shows that we're dealing with a new type of socialism that is not just about class division, but race division, gender division, division between legals and illegals, straights against gays. The left really divides society not just in one way, but in several different ways.
How is this, Dinesh, different from cultural Marxism? In other words, to me, what you're saying is the same thing. In other words, we have to divide people. We have to play
we have to pretend that that it's a zero-sum game. We cannot create wealth. We cannot increase wealth. We've got one pie, and it's a battle for who can get the most, and we're going to create our side versus their side. They're the oppressors. Isn't that also something we can call cultural Marxism in the way you've described it?
Yes, it is. But it takes socialism, I think, beyond its classic economic focus. I mean, if you look at socialists today, or even if you go to the Democratic Socialists of America convention, you will see like eco-socialists, Islamo-socialists, Afro-socialists, transgender socialists. So this shows the way in which cultural issues and cultural targets. One of the targets of socialism is always small business and private property. But here are some other targets: the family, the church, the moral order itself. So this is the way in which socialism tries to seize not just to confiscate your resources, but to control your movement, your freedom of assembly, your religious freedom. Notice how under coronavirus, those things were regulated, and the left is always trying to extend the regulation, and if they could, make it permanent.
Well, they saw an opportunity, and it is an amazing thing. You have to admit that in our lifetime, we've never seen anything like this. We've never seen anything where a free people, this free people, the American people, looked at the situation and said, yes, we will give up certain freedoms. We realize that it's probably prudent. We've never had anything like that. And so it's been, a class for American citizenry in what happens, how some governors handle it, how some mayors handle it, and how others handle it. It's really been, to my mind, clarifying.
Well, it is an exercise of the politics of fear. The left has realized that when the country is in a panic, people will agree to do things, kind of like a crowd. A crowd doesn't behave rationally. A crowd moves according to panic. It stampedes. So how do you create a national stampede? Well, FDR realized, I'm going to ride in the Depression. The Depression creates the fear, and now I can do things that I couldn't do if we didn't have a Depression. And so since then, the left has been trying to replicate that model, invented if necessary. So in the 70s, we remember, the planet is running out of food. In the 80s, nuclear apocalypse. In the 90s, the ozone layer was dissipating. For the last 20 years, climate apocalypse. The world is going to end in 10 years unless you do these 11 things that we insist be done right now. And right. Coronavirus was perfect because it's an invisible enemy, as Trump says. And so people don't know, is this a legitimate threat? What is the degree of the threat? And so as long as you can put out a bunch of guys in white robes who say, listen, shut the economy down, we then obediently do it. Now we catch on. After a while, we begin to realize, wait a minute, Georgia's opening up, the Florida beaches are opening. We're not seeing any massive spike in infections. In short, we are kind of onto the con, and then we begin to realize, look, you tried to sucker us. We're going to be a little bit more difficult to sucker next time.
And of course, to go even further, the fear mongering of folks like Governor Andrew Cuomo led to sending coronavirus infected people into nursing homes, which killed thousands. So in other words, when you look at the death toll, a large part of that death toll is because people overreacted, not because they didn't react quickly enough.
That's absolutely right. And then look at this looting that's been going on in New York and elsewhere. And I'm trying to think about people like de Blasio and Cuomo. And I thought to myself, where does their kind of solicitousness or even sympathy for these looters come from? And I think it's because when guys like de Blasio look at a looter, they see a younger version of themselves. De Blasio himself was a kind of apologist for tyrannical socialist regimes in his youth. And in some ways, you can almost see socialism as doing in a sort of official or systematic way what the looters are doing in a disorganized way. So the looters smash glass, they go into a store, they grab the handbags, they run out. De Blasio would rather have an 80% marginal tax rate in which he shuts the business down or confiscates his and in an orderly way transfers its resources to the looters who are then committed to voting for him. So this is really the socialist game, and Antifa on the street is only the street version of it.
What do you make of President Trump declaring Antifa to be a domestic terrorist group?
Well, I think we should be careful here. Antifa is not a domestic terrorist group in the same way that, say, ISIS is, because Antifa isn't doing beheadings. They haven't even done what the Weather Underground did, which was set off bombs at the Pentagon and so on. But Antifa is a paramilitary wing of the socialist left. And what makes it dangerous, I think, most of all, is its allies in academia that taught them. You can almost say academia is the theory and Antifa is the practice. Because academia says to these young people, hey, listen, this business with George, that's not anomalous. Cops are like that. America is structurally racist. We've been doing this to them since 1619. So now's the time finally to say enough. And so this resentment is cultivated in academia. And then you've got powerful people in Hollywood, in the media, even in the mayor's office and the governor's office who protect and defend these guys. That's why we have a national problem. It's, I think, similar to the paramilitary forces that Mussolini had, the black shirts or Hitler's brown shirts. They were ways of creating street conformity and street intimidation.
Right.
The left thinks they need that.
I was gonna bring up Hitler's brown shirts. That's what's chilling to me, that I've never seen that in my lifetime, and that now we have sophisticated thugs on the streets, really fomenting rebellion against the rest of us. We're going to go to a break, folks. I'm talking to Dinesh D'Souza, the author of a brand new book today, United States of Socialism. Don't go away.
The Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump wants to meet you. This will be the first opportunity he's had to meet with American patriots like you since our country started reopening. His team will cover the flight and hotel and give you VIP access for yourself and a guest. He'll even take a picture with you. All you have to do is text VIP to 88022 today for your chance to meet President Trump. Again, that's VIP to 88022 for your chance to win and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for 4 more years.
Hi folks, trying times. Just know they won't last. Trying times can be hard on our digestive tract. So why not try Life Change Tea at getthetea.com? Life Change Tea is an herbal blend of tea that helps the digestive tract and the colon cleanse from intruders. For years, people have experienced the benefits from Life Change Tea, and so can you. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And for those of you that want to go a step further, we have non-GMO organic supplements. If you're listening to Eric, you're informed and educated. So how about free shipping? Just go to the checkout, find the coupon code, enter Eric, E-R-I-C, hit apply, and receive free shipping. Again, Eric, in the coupon code, hit apply, free shipping. These historic times will pass. The yuck in your gut will pass also with getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com.
Hey there, folks. Welcome. I'm talking to my friend Dinesh D'Souza. He has a new book out today. It's called United States of Socialism. Who's behind it? Why it's evil? How to stop it? Dinesh, what led you to write this book specifically? You're very prolific. You've written many books. You typically deal with a big idea. This seems to me the big idea of our time.
Yeah. In fact, we came of age, Eric, at a time when it looked like socialism had collapsed. The fall of the Berlin Wall, the dissolution of socialism and communism in the Soviet Union, China and India moving away from socialism. So at one time, socialism dominated the planet. And then it seemed like it went poof. And there were just a few outposts, North Korea, Cuba, that socialism was really on the way out. And then suddenly in the 21st century, this idea that has never been in the mainstream of American politics. We've had socialist candidates before, Eugene Debs in the early 20th century, Norman Thomas, but they were always marginal. They never got mainstream support. Until now. And so I thought to myself, we've got to take on this new socialism. And it's not enough to take it on by just saying, hey, guys, it's never worked before. So it's not going to work again. Why? First of all, because we're dealing with this new type of identity socialism. But second, the left will say, hey, Dinesh, socialism does work. Look at Scandinavia. Look at Norway and Sweden. It's not so bad to live over there. You may not feel like living over there, but you can't say that those are horrible places to live. They've got a massive welfare state. So why don't we adopt not the Maoist model or the Castro model, but the Scandinavian model. So these were some of the ideas that got me to think, you know what? I think I need to take on this new socialism that is striking a chord with young people and offer not only an answer to it, but a political way to defeat it.
It seems to me fascinating, really, that because we have not taught civics in America and have not helped people understand what it is that has made America work and thrive and create wealth, we've allowed a vacuum, an idea vacuum. And so people can come in and have come in, of course, Bernie Sanders and AOC and the folks you have on the cover of your book. And they have sold a bill of goods that has never worked. You just said that it doesn't work, but somehow people, they haven't seen it not work. And so they have naive hope, and young people seem always to be the easy marks for this kind of marks, no pun intended, easy marks for this kind of thinking.
That's true. I also think that young people will say the Scandinavian model works, but they don't know what the Scandinavian model is. So the Scandinavian countries, for example, are capitalist in wealth creation. They're socialist in wealth distribution, but they're very careful not to kill the goose that lays the golden eggs. And so you have low corporate tax rates, about 20%, same as in America. You have no minimum wage in most Scandinavian countries. They have no wealth tax, no inheritance tax. You can hire and fire people for any reason. Regulations are less than in this country.
Dinesh, I just have to hit pause for a second. Everything you've just said is stunning. I mean, the idea that they have low corporate tax rates, low wealth tax. I mean, you would never dream that in a country that people think of as socialist, that would be the case. Bernie Sanders is not advertising that.
No. And in fact, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren want to impose financial transaction taxes on Wall Street. Now, there's no Scandinavian country that goes near this. A one Scandinavian country, Finland, tried universal basic income. They tried it for about 8 months. They got rid of it. They decided it doesn't work. So the Scandinavians, in other words, believe we need to create a wealthy economy. Now, the second part of it is they say, look, we can have a generous welfare state, but here's the point. Everybody has to pay for it, not just the rich. We're not going to go after the billionaires. The basic idea is if we have a 50% tax rate and you make $60,000 a year, give us 30. So in other words, they tax the middle class. And they also have a VAT tax, which is a consumption tax. That's 25%. And that falls disproportionately on the poor. So it would be fair to say that the Scandinavians do not soak the rich. They soak the whole society. No Scandinavian talks about free stuff because they know it's not free. Who's paying for it? They are.
And they know they are. Well, the key, of course, is whom do we trust? Do we trust bureaucrats to distribute our money, or do we trust ourselves or the free market? That, to me, of course, is the difference between freedom on the American model and that kind of a socialism. It seems to me that whenever you have what we call big government, there's corruption. You see it now everywhere. In other words, you have these folks who are governors or liberal members of Congress or the Senate who don't seem to believe in the people. They don't seem to believe that we, the people, are in fact the government. They have an elitist view that they know better. There's nothing really new about that. I mean, Buckley, I guess in the 60s, was saying that he'd rather be governed by, you know, the first 300 names in the Boston phone book than the Harvard faculty. He had this sense 50 years ago that the elites had a sense of entitlement and a sense that they should be the ones running things. And he knew that was fundamentally un-American. It seems we haven't moved from that idea.
Well, the socialist left, though, is clever because they talk about turning over the institutions to the people. If you listen to Elizabeth Warren carefully, it sounds like what she's saying is, why don't we have the people run healthcare? Why do we have to have the insurance companies? Let's turn it over to the... So the people, that's their rhetoric. Now, here's the key point. The people, in fact, have no say, right? What say do you or I have right now over the post office? None. What say do we have over the DMV? None. What say does the ordinary British guy have over the British National Health Service? None. So the people is a rhetorical smokescreen here.
Let me
really talking about the people.
Forgive me. We're going to hit pause. We'll be right back to continue the conversation with Dinesh D'Souza. Welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show, talking to Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh, you were just making the point that those who advocate socialism, they always use the rhetoric of the people, but in fact, they have no intention of actually giving the people the right to do very much. That's, to me, that kind of sums it up very nicely.
This, to me, is the key, and I think I'd like to try to highlight what I think is the most original argument that I make in this new book, United States of Socialism, and it's this. The left basically argues that they want democratic socialism. In their words, we want to extend the democracy that we already have in the political sphere to the economic sphere. We want to give the people control over the economy. Now, here's my answer. The people already control the economy far more in a capitalist system than they do in a socialist system. Why is that? That's because in a capitalist system, we vote as consumers with our dollars every single day. You vote not every 2 years or 4 years. You vote constantly and you don't just vote. Look, your vote in politics costs you nothing. It's election day. If it's not raining, you go out and vote. It costs you nothing. But the money you spend in the market, that represents your effort, your time, your labor. It means something to you. You're not going to part with it unless you're getting something of value in return. So this is my point. Capitalism gets popular referendum in the form of people's hard-earned dollars on a constant reinforcing basis. We don't have to extend democracy from the political to the economic sphere because we already have it.
That's a brilliant point, one which I will repeat with attribution. But that really is. Let me ask you about China for a moment. I have to say that I have been fascinated, not necessarily too surprised, by the cravenness of American corporations in their dealings with China. They seem to have sold their souls for the bottom line, that they're willing to do business with people whose view of human rights in the Communist Party in China is not that different from slave owners in America before the Civil War. In other words, it's very, very dirty money, and they don't seem to be using the power they have to get leverage over the human rights situation. They simply seem to be willing to let it ride. And it seems that Trump is the first president we've had that has identified the problem and that is willing to take on China, which is, of course, a vast socialist communist power. What do you think of that situation?
Yeah, China is an anomaly because they have jettisoned, to a large degree, their old socialist economic system, but they have kept intact their political communist structure. And so you have something that has really not existed in the world is essentially a communist capitalist state, China. It's unique. And it is able to force people to do things using the communist political structure. And we're not familiar with this, but I think for corporations, you're quite right. They don't have any patriotic loyalty to the United States. They're happy to offshore, if you will, the slave labor. They're just looking at what, by and large, is called the China price. In other words, if they can make something cheaper over there, we're just going to get it over there, mark it up, and then sell it over here. So Trump is fundamentally, he's a capitalist, but I think even more than that, he's a patriot. And he loves the country, and he looks out for America's interests. And he's kind of not bashful about that. And that itself is a little bit of a shock, because even going back to Bush and even Reagan, there was an attempt to sort of camouflage American interests when you speak in the language of global trade. So I think Trump, in that sense, is redefining the Republican Party and essentially considering trade itself as part of the political process, which, of course, it is.
But isn't that the problem? In other words, if previous presidents had done the right thing, the monster that is now China would not be as big as it is, and we would not have to deal with it in this way. But it seems to me that the naivete and the greed of Clinton and the Bushes with regard to China, thinking that, you know, the God of the free market is going to solve the political problems in China and make them just like us. You know, that's one kind of stupidity. The other is just the pure greed of saying that, knowing that at least whatever happens, I'm going to make a lot of money in China. Hollywood has made that bargain. And then the liberal naivete that there's really no such thing as evil, that if we can make a buck, we'll be fine. But there's no evil to be dealt with in China. We've let this go on for 30 plus years. And it seems that you need someone like Trump to deal with them in the way that he's been dealing with them. At least that's what I think.
The Chinese have had a longstanding policy of getting favorable treatment from the leaders of other countries by financing their family members. It's an old kind of Asian despotic mode of doing business. Now, if you look at Biden, for example, over the years, Biden's net worth has not gone up for the simple reason that he has to disclose any investments that he has, any deals that he makes. But now watch the Biden family, his brother, James Biden, his other brother, Frank Biden, his son, Hunter Biden. Their net worths have skyrocketed. Why? Because when Biden goes to China, he takes Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden then gets a deal through the Shanghai Free Trade Zone that is not available to Western investors, in which the Chinese government itself is putting in money, a $1.5 billion investment. So here's the point. The American left financially benefits in this very direct way. And it's very similar to countries like Venezuela, where Hugo Chavez, in the name of the people, becomes a billionaire. His daughter is now the richest woman in Venezuela. By the way, this does not happen in Scandinavia. You can never name a Scandinavian politician who has gone from zero to $50 million on a government salary. But that's happened with the Clintons. It's happened with Obama. It's happened with Al Gore. It's happened with the Bidens. So socialism in America is a way of making nothing, not inventing the iPhone, not creating Amazon Prime, none of that, but nevertheless profiting enormously and getting rich.
Yeah. And you understand, Dinesh, I think, that this is called corruption. This is at the very heart of what destroys American-style self-government and liberty. And when I've talked in the past about why we need leaders of character, this is the principal kind of character. Do you put yourself and your own interests above the country, or don't you? It seems to me that whatever people want to say about Trump, you can't make the case that he's getting rich off of being president, but that you can make the case that previous presidents have effectively sold their souls to people, to the leaders of China and so on and so forth for their own aggrandizement, which is horrific. We're out of time. We're going to be right back. Final segment, folks, with Dinesh D'Souza. That old wheel will roll around again. Yes, when love is...
The city streets are empty now. The lights don't shine no more.
Folks, I'm talking to Dinesh D'Souza. His new book out today, this very day, is called The United States of Socialism. Dinesh, what you just said about folks like Biden making their families rich by playing this corrupt game with China. You know, if it were only that, it would be very little. But the point is that the Chinese are not fools. They understand that for a few million given to folks like Biden and his family, for just a few million, they can buy things worth many, many billions, which, of course, costs America many, many billions. That seems to me what's been happening. And it is it seems to me treasonous or traitorous, but it's certainly corrupt.
Yes, it is. That's a very good way to put it. It's not expensive to buy off American politicians. And we know this in this country. I mean, if you're willing to give $25,000 to a political candidate, they'll return your phone calls, they'll listen to you, you'll be able to go to their house, and so on. So access in America is not that expensive politically. Now, try to imagine not just a Chinese tycoon or the Chinese government, but a Middle Eastern sheikh who's trying to get political favors from a... These are people who have oil coming out of the ground, who can offer, you may say, bribes in the millions, and also know that there are legal ways to pay those bribes such that you can then step back and Hillary just goes, oh, you know, they just made a donation to the climate change division of the Clinton Foundation. And then accidentally and coincidentally, I happen to favor these policies that have delivered billions of dollars to that particular entity. This is the socialist game. And I think the Democrats realize that when they speak of socialism, they're in a sense exploiting socialism itself, because it's not about the working class. It's not ultimately about making people equal. Orwell had it right. Some are, all the animals are equal, but some are more equal than others.
Final question with a little bit over a minute left. What do you think is going to happen with Durham and Barr going after some of the figures that have been investigating the Trump administration? Do you think this is going anywhere? Do you think anyone will go to jail?
I think they will, but I'm hoping it goes all the way to the top, because I cannot believe that Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and Comey and Clapper all thought of this themselves. They were like, let's go ahead and do this. Let's try to set up Trump. Let's try to set up Flynn. No way. These orders came, I believe, from Obama himself. He gave the order. And if that's the case, then the trail needs to go up to him. I don't know if it will. That man is more well protected. I mean, apart from the Clintons, who have stayed one step ahead of the posse for 30 years, Obama is extremely well protected. So I don't know. But I will say that shutting down the deep state, overthrowing digital censorship, and taking these Antifa thugs off the street, we've got to do all those three things to have a level playing field and return to an era of civility and genuine debate.
And do you have a sense that Trump has the will and the ability to do those things?
Yes, although I think in America, you sometimes need two terms to do it. Even with Reagan, America was a different country in 1988 because you have time not only to have the right policies. Look at the courts. The courts take time to change. Trump, I think, is on it in a way that we've never seen anyone be so on it. I think he also recognizes the importance of symbolism. He's very effective in popular culture. So I think he's, you know, in a very odd character, but nevertheless, the right man for this time. And I think he will deliver the goods.
Well, it's wonderful to have you on the program, Dinesh D'Souza. Congratulations on your new book, new today, The United States of Socialism. Good luck with it, my friend. Thanks for being on.
Thank you very much.